It is Thursday, the 6th of June, and this is episode 167 of Digital Outbox. Hello, I'm Chris. Welcome along to another episode. I'm joined as ever by Ian. Hello, Ian.
Good evening, Christopher.
Observant viewers, listeners, will notice that we've skipped from 165 to 167. 166 was an episode that will never be.
That was the best thing ever.
It was a great episode, and it does exist, kind of, but it's unfortunately due to circumstances beyond our control, shall we say. I'm a dumbass and can't upload things.
And I went to London.
So yeah. Unfortunately, it never got pushed out to the feed. To be honest, we've looked through the news story tonight to see whether there's anything we want to drag forward, and there wasn't anything. So never mind.
Missed, to be honest, the best bit you missed was your best Tim Cook impression ever.
Oh, it was another fabulous attempt at Tim Cook. In fact, it was like he was in the room.
It was.
There was also a good sex dog doll joke.
Sex dog?
I know, what? Specialist. Right.
Hashtag bestiality.
Lovely. Podcast, not a podcast without a bit of animal in there. Right. You've been to London and you were very excitedly telling me how you'd done it with no paperwork whatsoever.
I loved
it. This is travel, flights, and all sorts going on. Hotels.
Travel, trains, taxis, and it was like I'm forever carrying bits of paper and like there you go, British Airways, and it was like nope, I will check in, I will buy my train tickets, I will order my taxi through Halo or I don't know how to else pronounce it.
It is Hail.
Oh, Hail, Halo, Hail. Oh, and it just felt like I was in City of the Future.
Yeah, I mean that sounds properly. I love the way the Halo worked for you. So you basically booked your taxi. It told you it was coming. It told you where he was. Told you it was George.
Stepped out the training course and I said I need a taxi. And it just pops up and says the nearest one's 3 minutes away. And you say right, cool. And then it says yep, George has accepted you and he'll be along in 3 minutes. And you can watch him coming along the road and you get a little photo of him and you get a registration number and then you get in. He says are you Ian? And you go yeah.
And George sounded really nice on Halo, but he did snub you a bit by slamming his
to be honest,
his window.
The last taxi I was in London, he thought I was Irish. So it's kind of, I'm kind of glad that he just kind of shut up for the rest of the journey. And then when you get there, you just step out because it just automatically pays off your card. And it's like, this is the future.
Yeah, all great. Done without anything. But you missed out on Passbook. Your one and only attempt to use, a chance to use Passbook, and they updated it the day after, so you couldn't.
BA updated it. I came home really late, seeing as there was a radio not working on the plane, so we had to sit in the runway for ages. The biggest blowhard next to me ever.
Well, they really wanted to listen to Radio 1, did they?
Oh, no, it was just so annoying. He was asking everybody around about me wanted to talk to, and then he was asking about iPads, because I had my iPad out. And I was just like,
that's so not new news.
Exactly, I just put my headphones on. I just headphones on and ignored them. And then when we had to leave, I took my headphones off and the guy on my side of the thing, he says, yeah, I fell asleep instead of listening to him. What a bore. And it was like, yep.
Nothing you can do digitally to stop that anyway.
Nope. So BA updated their app to support Passbook yesterday. And I was like, BA. But no, it felt really nice to not have bits of paper and just use a smartphone.
Fine until your battery runs out, isn't it?
But it's an iPhone, the battery never runs out.
Yeah. Let's get on with some news, and we're going to start today with more snooping news. So Theresa May's been warned by the big players that her snooping charter, so this is all back in the news because of Woolwich terror attack, apparently. So they're kind of reasserting their desire to get all logs of our emails and Skype calls and any other communication we have. So a bit like, you know, your old phone records, they want that for the internet. And they're going to ask companies to store that information for 12 months. And companies have written to her and said, oi, this really isn't a good... And when I say companies, I mean people like Google and Microsoft and other big players, and they're saying this is really not a good idea. It's going to cost an awful lot of money. You're going to overreact, and there's going to be all this information stuck online, which potentially open to abuse. And pretty much what we've said all along, that this it kind of just shows that everything's been done too quickly and rushed through.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and they're still predicting this cost $1.8 billion. It would cost like 3 or 4 times that. It's another one of these crazy government projects that's just going to spiral.
How much data, like 12 months worth of everyone's internet usage is? And okay, it's only recording point to point, so it's saying, you know, this IP to this IP and at this time. But nevertheless, that's an awful lot of data.
And I mean, they already kind of admitted that it wouldn't have prevented Woolwich. The guy was already known to them anyway. So. It's
yeah, they knew the information, they just didn't act on it. And because probably that information's to a penny.
Yeah, and all this is just, it's just scaremongering. It's this whole thing about, you know, that this was a terrorist attack. And
they feel like they need to do something to calm people's, you know, but it's just...
And I think the bit that ticked me off the most is it's actually Labour supporting this as well, because they'd kind of semi-proposed, you know, a similar bill when they were in power. And it's actually our friend Nick Clegg that's actually saying, no, stop. This is crazy talk.
This is madness.
And so this letter leaked out, Twitter, Microsoft, Yahoo, Facebook, Google, so the big kind of 5 internet companies, saying no, we're not going to support this, and we'll actually probably fight this.
Yeah, and in another similar thing, we've had our culture secretary Miriam Miller. She's also summoned the same kind of companies to a meeting on the 17th of June to try and get them sort of like a brainstorming session to try and get them telling the government how they can make the internet safer for all of us poor people who are in danger. And it's, if you read the details, by safer, they kind of mean how are they going to stop us from pirating, and how are they going to stop us from looking at porn, basically. And that's...
Yeah, and I'm not convinced that that both of these things are joined up, because the whole kind of line they were going down with the porn argument was that if you want to view porn, then you need to have some way of authenticating that you are you, so that we can know it's you and you know what age you are and we can track that. And I just feel this is almost along the same lines as the kind of Snoopers Charter, you know, because if we're forcing people that you have to have some way that you authenticate, you can't just, you know, log in as anybody.
Yeah,
and it just makes it all...
And the companies are so against all this because they don't feel like it's their job to be the censor of the internet. And they're right. It's not in their remit, in their power. And, you know, and they won't make a good job of it. And they know they won't make a good job of it because it's just going to cause stink. We've seen what happens in Apple in relatively minor cases of censoring. People throw their hands up. So,
and it doesn't scale. I mean, the thing with Apple was we always said it wouldn't scale. So when the App Store started, nobody could predict what would happen with the world of apps and what that really means. But the censoring doesn't scale and things slip through, and, you know, there's some things that are censored and other things aren't. And it's the same with Facebook. You know, there's some things that they censor, you know, like there was this whole crazy thing that you know, a woman's boobs, you know, you can have a group with a picture of a, you know, a naked woman, but they were quite happy to have, like, you know, rape and, you know, like groups that encourage rape of women and all that kind of, and because it didn't, you know, fail the terms and conditions. And it's like, what? This is the crazy line when you start to become a policeman.
Yeah, and
this is where it fails.
And that's another thing that covers both these stories, is the fact that these companies are also saying, look, we exist in certain countries and we base by their jurisdiction and their laws. And you're coming in now and saying that we have to do, and they kind of say, we don't mind adjusting things for your country, but to have major differences between countries is just going to start making an awful lot of mess. So this needs to be a tied and joined up thing globally, really. And, you know, and we know how complicated that's going to be.
Yeah. And it's like the tax laws. I mean, everybody's seen the tax laws and Apple and Amazon and Google, they're not paying their taxes, but all they're doing is they're using the same laws as everybody else. There's loads of loopholes in there.
It's just companies are so big now that no one even envisaged they'd be that big, that they would have to cater for companies that exist globally and have bigger revenues than countries.
And it is truly multinational. I mean, it's not like the days of, you know, the 70s, 80s when Caterpillar was classed as multinational because they'd opened a factory here, but it was all paying the right taxes and then took all the kind of government grants and then shut down. It is truly... you know, employees all over the place, you know, registration so in every country around the world almost.
These companies are bigger than countries in many, many ways. It's just, it's a bizarre world we live in, but that's kind of true. Another tagged on story onto this is the privacy warning letters that were due
piracy.
To... Sorry, yeah. Piracy, privacy. Yeah, piracy warning letters. So they're, these were the letters going to be sent out if they copyright owners detected you downloading their material illegally. They were going to get your ISP to send out a warning letter saying, don't do that again. And if they sent out twice, then there was going to be sort of knock-on effects. But they've been delayed. So initially it was delayed from 2011, and now it's being delayed till 2015. So we've got massive, massive delay on where they wanted to be with this. And again, probably because it's much more complicated than they ever imagined. And much more expensive, no doubt.
Yep, and scarily, we covered this in 2010.
Yeah, I know.
I thought this had taken place. I thought this was kind of happening, so I was surprised to see that.
Because we do see warnings coming through from ISPs. I say we. I've seen one. So they must happen. So that what gets me is how active these copyright, lawyers, you know, firms are in pursuing this now. That I remember we had a stat not too long ago which was saying how many I don't know what the word is, how many times they'd contacted ISPs in a very short period of time, and it turned out it's almost like one every 3 seconds that they're sending out telling people to take down and all those kind of things. So they're spending an awful lot of money in chasing all these copyrights. But as people have pointed out, things have moved on since this act came in. And actually the content owners themselves have actually been a bit more innovative in shoving out their content in legal and accessible ways. So lo and behold, people are now starting to use those legitimate channels to go and get their content.
I'm just looking at while you were talking. Google in March, so it's probably going on again, but in 1 week, had 4 million takedown requests. You know, so how it's just that's
how
a problem.
Many, so 4 million takedown requests in 1 week.
Yeah. So 4 million URLs, please remove them from the internet, from your Google search engine.
My goodness me.
And it just doesn't scale, you know, and this is a problem with, you know, asking these companies to be, you know, internet policemen. The effort required, you know, and you see figures like, you know, Theresa May saying it'll take 1.8 billion. The knock-on effect to companies to try and manage all this and control all that is going to be phenomenal. It just does not scale. So yeah, seemingly 2015 until we see these letters come into place. And interestingly, that will be after the next election, potentially, which is in kind of May 2015. So I don't know if it's been pushed into...
I love the fact that everything goes well in the next period is fine.
Well, it just feels like it's next period, next parliament, next budget, next.
Yeah, it's always next.
You know, it's just pushing it on to be almost somebody else's problem. Here's some laws we've passed. We're quite proud of them, but not this time, please.
Yeah, no, I agree. Sky Broadband, they've been starting to block proxy sites for known torrent. And again, Pirate Bay. So basically where people set up proxy sites that let you access Pirate Bay, those proxy sites have now been removed. So it's at the moment it's only blocking sites that specifically allow you access to these torrent sites, and that's their only aim. So it's not blocking other proxies that are more general and generic. But nevertheless, it was done silently, probably based on court orders and enhancements to their previous judgments and things like that. So other people will have to follow suit. But, you know, just it's going to get harder and harder to get on these single proxies. I guess once these single proxies get targeted, then they're going to start moving on to the generic ones.
Yeah, I mean, I've just tried a couple just now and it didn't seem to still be working fine. I'm on Virgin. So what wasn't clear at the time, and it's still not clear, is whether it's Sky taking some early action, you know, whether they've been encouraged to take some
they
early
must
action
have,
or not.
I can't believe they won't have been encouraged to do it.
No.
Because, and again, it costs time and money to do these things, and they wouldn't do it if they didn't have to.
No, and the thing is, for these companies, a lot of them are media companies as well. If you look at something like Sky, who are exclusively covering, you know, Game of Thrones, it's probably in their best interest to make sure that people have a hard route to go and watch that.
Sure, okay, yeah.
So it's whether they've taken early action, whether it's court orders, I don't think it was clear. I think everybody assuming it probably is some court orders against the proxies now. Because I think one of them had jumped, was it not one had jumped from nowhere to number four traffic in the UK?
Wow.
Or most visited site. So it was almost like replaced Pirate Bay as this proxy was now the source of all evil.
Again, it will all dilute itself down and become relatively indiscoverable again. But, you know, people will go with what everyone tells them to go with. And therefore that, you know, I think around the edges, you'll still be able to get proxies. Maybe directly you won't.
Sorry, I just started pointing out that Jessops have just sent me some spam email saying, would you like a personalised card for your dad for Father's Day? He died 20 years ago, you fools. Yeah. Maybe I should just email Peter Jones just now and say, Peter,
oi.
These things don't really work most of the time. Cock.
RSS readers. So as we all know, Google Reader is going to go. But it looks like Feedly are going to be the new API of choice, though, for everyone's RSS readers. Feedly set out with the aim to completely duplicate, effectively, Google's existing APIs for their RSS feeders. And I think they're nearly there. And so people are now pledging their allegiance to the Feedly API.
Well, we're only 3.5-4 weeks away, so it's from 1st of July, it's shut down. And it's still key to my daily news gathering and news and catch up. I could probably move over to Twitter lists with a bit more difficulty, but I still rely on Google Reader as being the kind of sync engine. So they're rather cleverly. So a lot of people move to Feedly quite early on. And the app itself is really good. So the Feedly app and service is really good. And they've tried to address maybe some shortcomings they had for what they classed as a power user. You know, I just want to briefly go through lots of headlines. I don't want big graphics and all that kind of stuff. But they've now stood up an API, and this was part of their Normandy project. And rather than open it up to all developers, they went to the kind of popular apps. So Reader, Press, NextGen Reader, Newsify, GReader, so both iOS and Android, up the kind of really popular RSS readers. And they've baked in, or they will bake in support before the start of July. So it's great because it keeps those apps going, it keeps the servers going.
And I think also the concept will be that it will be a quick, you just point it to them rather than Google and everything will still work. Now, whether that's going to be the case, well, I guess we'll find out. But
you can already do it. If you fire up Feedly and just say, here's all my Google Reader feeds, it does import them all and it does respect all the folders you've got as well. So it actually works. It works really well. And they're also opening up to a second tranche of partners now, so there'll be a whole lot of other app developers out there that are now going to get access to this.
I hope that they have the infrastructure and have the infrastructure ability to be able to scale, because that's going to be the next thing, because I'm sure Reader just takes the amount of data processing that we just don't even understand or comprehend at the moment. But so hopefully they've got the skill on that front as well.
I think there's a few other people have had the same issue. Scaling up's not going to be trivial. But equally, a lot of the effort they've been doing is all kind of back end and getting the servers in place, and also getting the talent. They realised they needed a lot more talent to kind of build this service up. But they're also talking about tools for publishers, you know, Feedly buttons for websites, and also trying to make sure they're seen as a real visible, viable replacement for Google Reader. And they have lots of Chrome plugins and Firefox plugins and.
Well, it seems like they're the biggest player now. I mean, they pin their colours on the mast, and they seem to be the one that's attracting the attention. So chances are that the Reader apps going forward will be based on their API. Podcasting, here comes the ice cream van.
Hey, it's a bit late tonight.
I know.
Obviously, it's a hot day. People are out there buying ice cream.
Slower getting around it, yeah.
I wonder. Could we write a little API that, based on the time that the ice cream van tells you how hot it is in the UK?
Data mashup. Podcasting. Now, we reported a little while ago, probably getting on for 6 months now, how there was a patent owner that was pretty much saying they owned the patents on podcasting, and they were going to go around and chase down big players and get them to pay up. To be using similar podcasting type services. But as it turns out, that they're a bit more aggressive than that, and they're causing a bit of a stink.
They've went after two or three, not massive names, but big podcasting names. You know, so maybe firms that are making, you know, a good bit of money off the back of podcasting, or have been well established. But recently they've also started going up against CBS and NBC, and also sending demand letters to small podcasting operations. You know, folk not like unlike ourselves, really.
Yeah, amazingly, I'm sure we don't make any money from this. It just costs us time and money.
Well, I think for a lot of people, you know, podcasting is just a bit of labour of love.
Of course it is. And yeah. There's very few people that make money out of it, let's put it that way.
Well, how would you feel if a letter came through tomorrow that says, you know, there's some money?
I'd just say, this is none of my idea, it's all Ian. He just asked me along for the, you know, ride, and I just felt I couldn't turn him down. But if you want money, then
best ride ever.
if you want any money, then Ian's the man to talk to. See ya, and then I'll disappear off.
All right.
That make you so warm and fuzzy?
No, it makes me think that the whole operation's hanging by a thread. Since Henry's now off doing his Forrest Gump impression and running around the world,
he's not stopped.
He has.
Briefly.
We should actually point out that Henry he's been bitten by the running bug. So
every second at the moment he's out there.
Every Thursday he's basically doing a 10K.
Yeah, which is ridiculous.
It is. But yeah, so the Electronic Frontier Foundation, that was it.
EFF.
Yep. They have decided to fight on behalf of podcasters. It's a bit like the Apple troll from a couple of years ago. It needed somebody to kind of pick up the cudgel for the small guys. And they've decided enough's enough. If they don't do something, it's not so much an industry, but there's a great community. And for me, it's I get so much out of other people's podcasts, you know, so there's a lot of threat here for a lot of people. So they have decided to partner with the Harvard Cyber Law Clinic. And they basically believe that they can use prior art. So this patent is from October the 2nd, 1996. But if the way prior art works is if there's good examples from before that date that uses similar identical ideas, then it can basically disprove this patent that's been awarded.
Yeah, and we've seen prior art work before, but also we've seen it not work before. So there's no guarantees here that they... But, I mean, they say they're on a strong footing. Yep. And maybe they are. I mean, but we've certainly seen it fail before. Certainly with the iPad and things like that, we definitely saw it all fail about prior art. But good to see that they. I mean, they've been raising money, right? They've been asking for donations, and they wanted $30,000 or something, and they've actually doubled it. They've made about $60,000. Is that right?
So this actually was posted up just after last week's podcast, which did exist. And they were looking for $30,000, and within 24 hours, they more than met their target. It's now sitting at about $68,000. So they're still looking for more money because they do reckon it'll be an ongoing process.
If you want to make money out of technology, get to be a lawyer.
But it's good to see that kind of community donating that much money and pushing behind
it. Let's hope they hold the letters off from our doors. Zynga, they've been having troubles. Zynga are the big games, or they used to be the really big games company. Cityville, did they make Farmville? I think they did. Farmville and Words with Friends and Draw Something. So they made some of the big old social games, and they were quite early on that thing. They floated, and since they floated, they've had trouble keeping their stock value up. But based on the fact that they can't work out quite how to make money on mobile, I think. Basically, people aren't spending as much in their games. So they've seen their stocks fall 64%, and they're having to lay people off, 580 people. So that's 16% of their workforce. They come out with the normal statements of being devastatingly upset.
We went through a massive scaling up period, buying all their competitors, you know, anybody that brought a successful game.
They just cloned it, didn't they?
They either bought it or cloned it, and that was a threat. You know,
yeah,
let us buy you,
or we'll just make one. Squash you.
Yep, and with our might and with the power of Facebook behind us, we'll cuff you. And so it's for a lot of people, it left a lot of, you know, actually left a bad taste in the mouth.
But if 580 people is only 18% of their workforce, that's a massive workforce.
As I said, it just grew enormously mostly off the back of Facebook, and then I think they had some early iOS success.
So it's almost like that they kind of needed to have a consolidation anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just.
But it's not nice for those 580 people.
As I said, they're not the most well respected.
No.
Amongst they make really popular games, there's no denying it, but I think they've struggled to keep that popularity going. They've got lots of competition now, and you have got things like EA come along saying, actually, hold on, we can do games just as good as you in this community.
And there are so many games out there now that are just cynical ways of trying to, you know, make money out of you by slowing everything deliberately down and making it awkward and time restricted.
The in-app purchasing in some of the games is just...
It's starting to get silly. And when you've got in-app purchase for, you know, regularly seeing them for like 70, 80 quid, and it's really easy to click on them as well. I mean, they pop them up at the most inobvious... I mean, I'm playing this stupid game called Tribes, and basically it's a ridiculously stupid game where you just click on things all the time, and that's about all you do, and then you're time restricted. But every now and again, it just pops up a window saying, do you want to buy this? And it's easy to press. And so if you've just validated something and typed in your password, it's a pretty damn easy thing to accidentally spend 80 quid. And, you know, it's ridiculous, really. And it's so cynical, and I hate myself for playing that game.
And it's like, I mean, Real Racing 3 came out and they said, yeah, we're free and we're going in that purchase. But then that purchasing, I mean, some of the ones are ridiculous. And I actually played quite a bit of it. I actually quite enjoyed it. But it's too repetitive for the tracks. And then I've kind of given up on it now.
Yep.
But there was a stunning game there, which I think people would have easily paid, you know, £10 on a mobile device. It was a superb game.
But there you go. Really, that's the pricing model they chose, and whether it's worked out is.
It just sticks in the throat, you know. Like you buy a car, and it says, "Oh, the dealer's taking 3 hours to deliver this, unless you want to pay with some gold coins." And it's like, what's this delivering dealer nonsense? Rubbish.
Right. It clearly works. Clearly works. I mean, there's psychology in it, because games that seem to restrict you, you do stick with. Anyway.
Mm.
Nintendo have partnered with O2, and they're going to give their 3DS owners Wi-Fi access on O2's hotspots around the UK. And O2 hotspots are quite prevalent. They're all over the place. So actually not a bad little partnership there.
No. If you've got a Nintendo 3DS.
If you've got I think that's the more the question, right?
Chuck's got one.
Yeah, there are loads of people have them. They were the last.
And it's like, I've seen it and played it. It's actually the bigger size one is actually very nice.
Yeah, I don't know how much you end up playing it multiplayer, but maybe this is an attempt to try and really spur that on, because, you know, up until now it was up to you to try and connect however you could, but this is offering a good, easy way of doing it.
Yes.
Good for them. One story we've carried forward from last week, because we couldn't resist. This is the story of the cube. You remember Curiosity and the clicking away of the cube's layers, because Peter Molyneux said we were going to have some unbelievable prize inside the box when we clicked away the last cubelet.
I remember downloading the app and it never worked straight away, so I deleted it.
Yeah, it had some problems to start with, and then eventually they did get it all working. But
did you play any of it?
Yeah, I did, surprisingly. I probably clicked away near enough a million cubelets. In the end,
you didn't.
I can't remember exactly what the number was.
You did not.
I think because every
so like a million times you've tapped.
Nah, because you can pretty much use the palm of your hand. And more.
There are tapping techniques.
There are. But basically, last week we got to the middle of the cube.
Wow.
Yeah, and do you know what? There was a prize inside.
Well, there was lots of speculation that it was like
he called it this most amazing life-changing experience.
So what was in the middle? Come on, what was in the middle?
Well, Peter Molyneux was in the middle of the cube, as it turned out, telling you that you'd won. So if you were this first person from Edinburgh, he downloaded the app. Right, there have been people here clicking away at millions and millions and millions of these cubes. I mean, some people got through a ridiculous number of cubes, and someone downloaded it on the morning and clicked about 100 cubes and won, which pissed people off quite a lot. Anyway, the most amazing prize apparently was to become God in their new game of Goddess.
The Kickstarter one?
The one that we've already paid for.
Interesting.
Hmm.
I didn't pay for it.
No, nor did I. but apparently this is a life-changing experience, because you will be able to influence their game as the god of gods. And everyone kind of went, yeah, right, that's pissed me off.
Basically, this has nothing to do with gaming. It's all about Peter Molyneux's ego.
Yeah, pretty much. So say he was inside the cube. That was ridiculous.
Yeah. Hi, what's inside the cube? It's a me, a Peter.
Anyway, so yeah, he's. They are going to give the winner also a small slice of the pie. So whenever they sell a game, and they're going to give him not disclose how much, but they reckon that was going to be life changing as well. Even though they said it was nothing to do with money, they clearly thought they had to do that.
It's a massive pie, and he gets like 0.01%.
Yeah, whatever. So how annoying. But anyway, so not really that life-changing. I mean, Bomb thought it might be a trip to space or something, which truly would be a life-changing experience.
And see, if that had happened, that would have been like newsworthy.
Yeah, absolutely. That would have been great. Didn't I see today that they're going to chuck Bieber out into space or something? Maybe he'll never come back.
Maybe I'll find a gun.
What? Accidentally have... No, let's not go there. BBC's online clock, which, you know, is a fabulous bit of whenever you're on the BBC website, you can look at the clock and see the time. And being BBC, obviously, that'll be nice and accurate, and so you can set your watch by it.
Well, you'd think so.
Apparently not.
Apparently not.
No, so they are just using your internal computer's clock time to...
Did you ever notice?
No.
Neither did I.
I had to look at the homepage to see where the clock was. So I know that it used to be bigger. It's slightly smaller now. But yeah, so apparently, though, there's been a complaint that the homepage...
A complaint from one user.
Yeah. That
what a dick.
What a knob. That was an inaccurate thing, and they expected more from the BBC. And actually, the complaint's been upheld because the BBC said, yeah, okay, we could be inaccurate and misleading. To be honest, most computers now are synced to online time. So... It's not, you know, anyway, they're having to remove that clock from the homepage of the BBC.
The best bit was, like, the trust had to investigate this. They then found in favour of this complaint, and the BBC's had to do, like, ideas, a spokesman telling everybody what's going to happen.
How much is that all costing?
And they're going to do an update. And then the next day they actually confirmed, well, if we did want to replace the clock with an accurate clock that can cope with all the different scenarios, that would be 100 man days of coding. What?
Gee whiz. Yeah. So... Not worth it, so they're just going to remove it.
I think the same answer would have just been, get your own clock fixed.
Yeah.
Knob.
That's the end of the news. So you've got a pick for us.
I have a pick, which is the same pick as last week, but seeing as nobody heard me, I may as well do it again. This is a nice little game for iOS called Dots. Quite addictive. It's from Betaworks, who are best known for Deg. I just realised I've put lots of G's in and Instapaper. And there was an update that came out last week that also meant it worked for iPad. You get 60 seconds, you join up some dots in the same colour, and they disappear. And you set a high score. But that's about it.
And every time they disappear, they get replaced, do they?
Yes, they do. So it's just more dots appear, and you just try and get rid of more dots. And go for high score.
So it doesn't sound spectacular, but I imagine that when playing it, it's better than that.
It is.
Sorry for downing on you.
You get little, you know, you can double click and they disappear, and you can buy more. So there is some in-app purchase, but you don't need to follow that.
Of course, there's always an app.
There's always an app purchase. Android's in the works. And it is one of these things that I dismissed it when it first came out. I just thought, oh, it's naff. And I would put it on, and it was like, that's naff. And then everybody was playing it, and everybody's playing it. I thought, I'll give it another go. And it was like, oh, I am hooked.
There we go. So that's Dots. So search for Dots on iOS at the moment, but coming to Android some point soon.
And just before you do your usual wrap up, I feel like pointing out that next Monday is potentially the biggest geek day in history.
Go on, sum us up. What's happening Monday then?
So 6 o'clock UK time is WWDC.
Are we going to see some new products?
Yeah, 5:30 UK time is the Xbox announcements.
Oh, so this is E3 stuff kicking off.
That's E3.
Yeah.
I can't remember if it's before or after that PS4 announcements are taking place all on the same day. So that's like the three big tech things that are happening on Monday. And at 9 o'clock is the last episode of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, for this season. We can't talk about Game of Thrones because there's about four people that I know that are willing to kill me if I mention anything. But all I will say is that last episode was blooming fantastic.
Do you know, I've not watched it yet. And somebody ruined it for me this morning at work.
So
turned to me and said, what do you think of wah 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 wah?
Without any warning. Annoying. There you go. It's your own fault for not having been able to watch
it. I've not had a chance to watch it yet. It was like, but it was on Monday. And I was like, yes, you cock, and I've not been here.
Nevertheless, not all their fault. But yeah, anyway, I won't say anything more than that, but it was a great episode, so go watch it.
Yeah, thanks for that sterling advice. Go and watch an episode of Game of Thrones. Watch it.
You could do a lot worse. That is the end of our podcast. You can find out more about us and what we do. DigitalOutbox.com. info@DigitalOutbox.com is our email address. Twitter and Skype, we're on as Digital Outbox. You can Twitter me at CheesyUK. You can watch my racing, academyracer.co.uk. My next race is not this weekend, the weekend after. And Ian, where can we find you?
Iand.net and Twitter Sweeper.
Perfect. So we will hopefully talk at you next week if everything goes well. Hopefully we'll have another episode that never was. Speak to you then. Bye.
Goodbye. We can't have another episode that never was.
No. No. Will anyone? No.
No.
No. But we might have more episodes that never were if this letter comes through.
To be honest, I'll just forward it to Shaq.
It's true. Yeah, you bounce my bounce to you. You got to bounce off to Shaq. It was all his idea.